Happily, Governor Morton was in town, and although a deeper pallor came over the ashen hue of age as he spoke, yet there was no tremor in his voice. "Let the 7th, 23rd, and 71st regiments be ordered under arms." In a few moments, hundreds of messengers could be heard racing through the silent streets, summoning the members of these regiments to their armories. Slowly, but with astonishing nerve and steadiness, the mobs pushed the police northward, and although the force stood the onslaught with magnificent courage, yet beaten back, the dark masses of infuriated burghs surged up again with renewed fury and strength. "Will the troops be in time to save the city?" was the whispered inquiry among the knots of police officials who were directing the movements of their men. About 9 o'clock, with deafening outcries, the mob, like a four-headed monster breathing fire and flame, raced, tore, burst, raged into Union Square. The police force was exhausted, but their front was still like a wall of stone, save that it was movable. The mob crowded it steadily to the north, while the air quivered and was rent with mad vociferations of the victors. "Bryan is elected! Bryan is elected! Our day has come at last! Down with our oppressors! Death to the rich man! Death to the gold bugs! Death to the capitalists! Give us back the money you have ground out of us! Give us back the marrow of our bones which you have used to grease the wheels of your chariots!" The police force was now almost helpless. The men still used their sticks, but the blows were ineffectual, and only served to increase the rage of the vast hordes now advancing upon Madison Square. The Fifth Avenue Hotel will be the first to feel the fury of the mob. Would the troops be in time to save it? A half cheer, a half cry goes up. It's inarticulate. Men draw a long breath. Women drop upon their knees and strain their eyes. They can hear something, but they cannot see as yet, for the gas houses and electric plants had been destroyed by the mob early in the evening. They preferred to fight in the dark or by the flames of rich men's abodes. Again, a cheer goes up, louder and clearer this time, followed by cries of, "They're coming! They're coming!" Yes, they were coming. The 22nd down Broadway, the 7th down Madison Avenue, both on the double quick. In a moment or so, there were a few bugle calls and a few spoken commands rang out clear and sharp, and then the two regiments stretched across the entire square, literally from wall to wall, in line of battle. The mob was upon them. Would this slender line of troops, could it hold such a mighty mass of men in check? The answer was a deafening discharge of firearms, a terrific crack such as some thunderbolts make when they explode. A wall of fire blazed across the square. Again and again it blazed forth. The mob halted, stood fast, wavered, fell back, advanced again. At that moment there came a rattle as of huge knives in the distance. It was the gallant 71st charging up 23rd Street and taking the mob on the flank. They came on like a wall of iron, bristling with blades of steel. There were no outcries, no cheers from the regiment. It dealt with death in silence, save when two bayonets crossed and clashed in bearing down some doubly vigorous foe. As bells rang out midnight, the last remnants of the mob were driven to cover, but the wheels of the dead wagons rattled till daybreak. And then the aged governor, in response to the mayor's, "Thank God we've saved the city," made answer, "Aye, but the Republic." Chapter 2. Great as has been the world's wonder at the uprising of Mr. Bryan's struggling masses in the city by the sea, and the narrow escape of its magnificent homes from fire and brand, yet greater still was the wonderment when the news was flashed across the land that Chicago did not stand in need of a single federal soldier.
"Chicago is mad, but it's the madness of joy. Chicago is in the hands of a mob, but it's a mob made up of her own people, noisy, rude, and boisterous, the natural exaltation of a suddenly enfranchised class. But bent on no other mischief than glorifying over the villainous and self-seeking souls who have ground the faces of the poor and turned the pitiless screw of social and political power into the hearts of the common people until its last thread has been reached and despair pressed its lupine visage hard against the door of the laboring man." And yet, at this moment, when the night air quivered with the mad vociferations of the common people, that the Lord had been good to them, that the wicked money changers had been driven from the temple, that the stony-hearted usurers were beaten at last, that the people's William was at the helm now, that peace and plenty would in a few moons come back to the poor man's cottage, that silver was king, aye, king at last, the world still went wondering why red-eyed anarchy, as she stood in Haymarket Square, with thin arms aloft, with wild mind and